Notre Dame finally takes down the big bad SEC and they advance to the college football playoff semifinal. Our instant reactions to Notre Dame, Georgia here on the College Football Power Hour. Okay, pop quiz, Adam Fitz, what happened on September 7th, 2024? Any takers?
God, I was always bad at quizzes. It's no surprise.
Was that when Notre Dame lost to NIU?
That's when Notre Dame lost to NIU, and this team has never been the same since. Welcome into the College Football Power Hour. He's Adam Brenneman. That's Jason Fitz. And I am Caroline Fenton. And Notre Dame takes down the Georgia Bulldogs 23-10 in the Sugar Bowl. They advance to the College Football Playoff semifinal to take on Penn State in Miami. Notre Dame made a statement yesterday. Notre Dame made a statement against the SEC. Notre Dame made a statement against kind of what's been plaguing them over the last 10 to 15 years. Notre Dame out Georgia on defense. They were stifling defensively. Notre Dame made the plays they needed to play to make on special teams. And then there was a nice little Marcus Freeman special, little fake on 4th and 1 at the end of the game that really kind of put the game away. And ultimately, it was 54 seconds. 54 seconds was all Notre Dame needed to put up the points that they needed to put up to take down Georgia. Adam, your thoughts on Notre Dame's win yesterday?
I mean, that September 7th game feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? It's a different era. I saw the Riley Leonard post-game interview, and he made a comment like, you know, we've overcome a lot. And he's like, we were as down bad as you could possibly be after we lost to NIU. And to now come back and to win the way they did against Georgia. You know, 23-10 Notre Dame was the final score, but it felt like after that first drive or so, Notre Dame was in control of this game the entire way. Notre Dame set the tone, allowing just 19 rushing yards in the first half to Georgia. 19 rushing yards to a Georgia offense that, you know, has had to run the football throughout the year. They completely made Georgia one-dimensional. You know, it's the same story as Texas. These SEC teams can't line up and bully teams anymore. They're not built like that, and Notre Dame proved it. Notre Dame controlled the middle eight of the game, which is one of the more critical stats in football, which is the final 4 minutes of the first half and first 4 minutes of the second half. That middle 8 minutes, you know, Kenny Dillingham's a guy I've heard talk about it over and over again. They got middle eight signs hanging up in their building. Notre Dame controlled that. That's been a recipe that's worked well in the playoffs for almost every team. And you think about the game, it was 3-3 deep into the second. I mean, it was a tie game, and it looked very close. And then you look up at half, you're down 13-3 if you're Georgia, massive swing, and then it's a 17-point swing in 54 seconds or 55 seconds with the kick return for a touchdown. So ball game like that, you blink and the game's over. So I thought it was really a good job by Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman of, in a week filled with adversity, to get his guys focused and to play well in the most critical moments of the game. The best stat line for me, Riley Leonard with 80 yards rushing. That was the telling point. That was the most important stat for Notre Dame because they were struggling on offense. But when Riley Leonard had the 3rd and 6 conversion to ice the game in the fourth, that was one of the biggest plays in recent Notre Dame history, to seal the game with Riley Leonard running the football. Overall, Riley Leonard played well when he needed to. He's played good enough all year for Notre Dame. And this is a Notre Dame team that is a real national championship contender despite all the adversity early in the season.
I mean, that run you mentioned, just the fact that he went airborne to get the last portion of it was one of those moments, you know, is just going to be replayed over and over and over again. And guys, I keep thinking about the fact that this year, I know the college football playoff has existed for a minute, but the expanded college football playoff sometimes changes narratives. And the narrative for a long time has been, well, Notre Dame doesn't win when you get them in the playoffs. I think that narrative has been absolutely squashed this year. And, you know, we can say what we want about the draws that different teams got. Obviously, this game didn't go different than I thought it would, in the sense that Georgia, without their starting quarterback, was going to be a little hamstrung anyway. But, man, Notre Dame came out and did exactly what they needed to do. They controlled this game from the outset. And, Adam, you make a really good point about the physicality. Like, I think we have to acknowledge that the new era of college football, we see this in recruiting all the time, right? Top 100 recruits are going to more schools than ever. It's more spread out than it's ever been. It's not just as simple as my big guys can beat up your big guys. And what do we see? We saw a Notre Dame team that came out, was ready for a physical fight. This was 3-3 because it felt like a heavyweight battle, right? Like two defenses that were just knocking the snot out of each other. And eventually it was going to give. All it took was one turnover. And I go back to what I yelled, and Georgia fans didn't want to listen to. When you've got a young backup quarterback coming into play, you don't have a huge margin of error in these types of games. I'm not saying that it was an error for that turnover, but those are the little moments that, frankly, you're screwed. Once you have that happen, the turnover leads to a touchdown, then the punt return or the kickoff return. This game got out of control because of two or three plays that just absolutely took Georgia out of it.
And it was always going to have a margin for error that was very, very thin. For Georgia, especially with a backup quarterback, but also with two defenses as good as they are, both Notre Dame and Georgia, points were going to be hard to come by for anyone and everyone. And once Notre Dame got the score up to 20, I thought, I don't know if a Gunnar Stockton-led offense in Georgia that had as much trouble running the football as they had yesterday can score 20 points. And that's Adam's point. Like, you blink your eye and it's completely over. It was the field goal, and then it was the touchdown when they got the ball at what, inside the 20? And then it was the second half kickoff return. That was it. That was all it really took. And there was nothing that I saw from Georgia in the first half that made me think that they were going to be able to overcome a deficit like that. And it is not very frequent, if not ever, that I feel like Kirby Smart comes into a game with everything on the line, where it is win in advance and lose and go home. I've never felt like Kirby Smart has gotten outcoached. Marcus Freeman outcoached Kirby Smart yesterday, Adam.
Agreed. And if Georgia was going to win this game, it was going to have to be a fast start where they could just ride the wave and then not allow Notre Dame to score. That was going to be the recipe for how Georgia won. But their ineffectiveness in the run game didn't allow that. It didn't allow for the style of play that was needed for Georgia to actually win and compete. They also turned the ball over in two critical moments while Notre Dame did not have a turnover. That was a storyline of the game. This was a textbook game between two talented teams that don't have elite quarterbacks. It comes down to third down. It comes down to turnover margin. It comes down to a few key plays around the margin in the game. I thought a couple moments too. Georgia needed to score at the end of the first quarter, but then that turnover you mentioned, Caroline, changed the entire outcome if they could have gone up 10-0. But to your point, Caroline, what you just said about Marcus Freeman, Georgia didn't lose this game. Notre Dame took it from them. Notre Dame won this game on their terms. And sure, Gunnar Stockton had a respectable debut. But turnovers and the special teams mishaps for Georgia were the backbreakers for him. And Notre Dame made them pay for every single mistake. It's one thing for a team to make mistakes. It's another for the team they're playing to make them pay and take advantage of it. And that culture is real for Notre Dame. Notre Dame's dealt with injuries during the season, but they've played like a championship level team. And this is a program and a team that since that loss to NIU has had an edge. They've been dangerous, and they've played confident at an extremely high level. I think Marcus Freeman deserves a ton of credit.
And not only, I mean, you mentioned the turnovers and the kickoff return. Let's acknowledge the offsides penalty on fourth down after the great Marcus Freeman moment. Like, you know, running the team off the punt field off, punt team off, you get your team back on, hard count, and Georgia falls for it. I mean, yeah. If you want to talk about some of the little moments here, there was a drop pass late in the game that was on a key. It would have been a conversion for Georgia. What do you know? They dropped a football. Like, how many times have we seen that this year?
That was horrific. Yeah. You have to catch that.
You see the drop. You see the offsides on a fourth and two. That's just it was a backbreaker. So, like, it's funny because it's not just the turnovers. It's not just the special teams. It's also the little moments throughout the course of the game that Georgia was not good enough a lot this year with. This Georgia team, supremely talented, certainly, but man, this Georgia team let itself down over and over again throughout the course of this season.
Well, I want to talk about the fourth and one. Marcus Freeman brings out the punt team and then substitutes all 11 players, brings the offense back out on the field, draws Georgia offsides, and then they get an automatic first down. And it essentially put the game away because they had that substitution with like seven and some change left. And then they just ran it, ate up so much clock that Georgia got the ball back with like a minute and a half left. There was nothing that they could do. Kirby Smart talked after the game about how his understanding was that it was illegal to substitute all 11 players. I've done some digging into the NCAA college football rule book, which, as you can imagine, is incredibly, you know, entertaining reading. But there was an article out on sports.yahoo.com that really kind of highlighted it all for me. There's nothing in the rule book, at least to my or this writer's knowledge, that says you can't substitute all 11 players. So I don't know if that's gamesmanship by Kirby Smart trying to utilize the media after the game, or if that was really just an oversight on him not understanding the rule correctly, if it was an SEC rule versus an NCAA rule. I don't know what the issue was there, but Adam Fitz, to any of your knowledge, I didn't think it was illegal what they did.
And I don't think it was gamesmanship, because he was the camera caught him afterwards, right after the play, saying, "You can't do that. You can't do that." And, you know, this is one of the interesting things we see all the time. Like, college football coaches find loopholes and try and find a way. And a loophole on that one that Notre Dame had to be really prepared for. Because remember, the minute you start that sub, you have to give the other team time to sub their players in. So you can't wait too long to sub the all 11, because they've got to have time to run their 11 on. And then you've got to get set. Like, it's a lot of risk in this, Adam. That felt to me like the sort of thing that Notre Dame had been practicing for a long time and finally pulled that bag out of their trick. Because there is nuance to executing that perfectly.
No, I was just going to say that I think the story there is how well prepared Marcus Freeman had his team for that moment. It reminds me of Oregon-Ohio State game when Dan Lanning was ready to put the 12th guy on the field to get the penalty, remember, at the end of that game, and just was ready for that situational moment. You know, and the way a lot of this works in situational football, there's so many situations. Think about how many random end-of-game, four-minute, two-minute, punt out of, like, all these different situations that coaches have to prepare for. And usually the way coaches operate with it is, like, you put them all in during training camp. So they all, you know, there's probably 80 of them, all 80 random situations. And I'm talking, like, even, you know, what do you do when there's 4 seconds left on the, or what do you do when there's 8 seconds left on the clock and you have to wonder, it's fourth down. How do you take out all 8 seconds? What do you do when it's fourth and one and you're trying to jump them off sides, but you don't want to waste a timeout. You don't have time, like, all these random clock situations. You insert these situations during training camp and you rep all of them. So everyone on the team knows how we handle these situations. And what would happen where I was, like, when I played for James Franklin, there'd be a new situation every day practice in training camp, and they would actually do a slideshow presentation on, here's the situation, here's what we're calling the situation, and here's how we handle it. And then you get quizzed on it and we rep it in practice. But the issue is you can't rep them all week long. There's too many situations. So throughout the weeks, you kind of rotate on, like, what you're going to rep so that it when it comes up, you've at least done it maybe 4 weeks ago and the players still kind of remember the situation. So to me, that's a great job by Notre Dame Marcus Freeman of, at some point, having repped that a couple times. You don't get to rep it every week. You don't get to think about it that much, but they knew the situation and the players all knew how to handle it. Because if that goes wrong, it's a different game. If they end up jumping off sides themselves, if they get a delay of game penalty, if something, if there's a mistake there, it's a high risk maneuver. And it paid off perfectly and sealed the game for them. So I think Marcus Freeman and the Notre Dame players deserve a ton of credit.
High risk, especially considering they were deep in their own territory. If Georgia gets the ball there, if they stop them on fourth, Georgia gets the ball and they more than likely score, as long as Parker Jones doesn't hit a referee on the sidelines and brings him back a few yards. So incredibly high risk and obviously incredibly high reward. It was essentially what put that game on ice.
Felt bad. I felt terrible for that kid, by the way. Like, I got a lot of love for the people that I worked with at ESPN for a long time. That was a bad move by the network, finding him on the sideline and putting his name. And it, like, they didn't need to do that. That's a walk-on kid that hasn't played a single second of football. And now he's going to be known forever in the Georgia lore, not for, you know, going out there and trying his best as a walk-on in practice. No, he's going to be known forever for that moment. I just thought that was a small moment by the broadcast team to turn around and really pin him under for that. It's just,
they showed him again.
Hold on. Is this coming from the guy who's putting the kickers by name on our stock down report
yes,
every week?
Yes.
That's coming from that guy.
But we know there's a difference. When you're a walk-on that's just in a jersey with no pads, it's never played a single snap. Like, you're basically just a tackling dummy for your team, right? Like, you know that, like, you know the work that walk-ons put in that is just glorified. Like, there's not a lot of glory in what they do. They don't walk around campus with the same level of, I play Georgia football, right? Like, to me, if you're a kicker, at least you're a scholarship kid that's, like, walking around with a swagger, right? If you're a walk-on, man, there's a lot of risk and no reward out of that. I just felt bad for the kid. You're right, though. I am a hypocrite throwing kickers under the bus, but I felt bad for the kid.
Yeah, Fitz throwing, you know, government names for the kickers, their addresses, their social security numbers, and now, you know,
got one job.
It is true. Yeah, the broadcast showed him again, because obviously this happened first few minutes into the game. And then fourth quarter, as the game is winding down, they show him again. Let the poor kid live. He's like hiding behind everybody in the sidelines. Like, let the poor kid just be sad and let the poor kid just take the absolute ass beating that I'm sure he got from Kirby Smart in the sidelines. Before we put a bow on this conversation, I have a question that is probably a little bit unfair, but a question that I pondered nonetheless. Does that game go differently if Carson Beck is quarterbacking for Georgia? It's unfair because we're not going to know the answer to it. And it's unfair because we can hypothetical ourselves to death. But I think no, because maybe Carson Beck doesn't take a few sacks that Gunnar Stockton took. And no, Carson Beck probably doesn't take a delay of game penalty that Gunnar Stockton took yesterday, just because Carson Beck's seen more football, because Carson Beck has experienced more football. Maybe Mike Bobo calls the game differently because he trusts Carson Beck more than he trusts Gunnar Stockton. But overall, I didn't step away from this game saying that Gunnar Stockton was the issue. If there was anything that was the issue offensively, it was pass protection and run blocking. It was the offensive line that was the biggest maybe culprit for me offensively, Fitz.
Yeah, I think part of this is also, if you're Georgia, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't sit here and tell me that having a more mobile quarterback that everybody loves is going to help. Look, Notre Dame came into this game with the same game plan they would have had if Carson Beck, I think, was starting. And Adam, you can tell me if I'm wrong. But to me, we've seen this. Like, we're going to stop the run. We're going to do everything we can to stop the run. And they threw the kitchen sink at stopping the run. That would have been the same thing that they did either way. Those receivers have let any quarterback that they have thrown them the ball, they've let them down all year. I don't think that this was indicative of, man, they were a quarterback away. This was indicative of the fact that Notre Dame understood something that has been a theme throughout the playoffs. If you can make a team truly one-dimensional, you will beat them in the playoffs. Notre Dame had a great game plan to make Georgia one-dimensional. I think that would have been the case no matter who was the quarterback.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Fitz. Carson Beck, Gunnar Stockton, does not matter. Notre Dame would have won this game, and the reason is because Georgia couldn't run the football. And we've seen when Carson Beck has struggled during the season, he's throwing interceptions. A lot of the time, it comes when Georgia's struggling to run the football, putting a lot of pressure on your quarterback. And Georgia had, 60-some rushing yards, 2 yards a carry. That no matter who your quarterback is, it could be Tom Brady, you're going to have trouble throwing the football and playing quarterback when you're that bad running it. So I think that Notre Dame game plan put a ton of pressure on their young quarterback, Gunnar Stockton. Would have been the same way if it was Stetson Bennett. And the way Notre Dame's defensive front dominated was the story of this game, not necessarily the Georgia quarterback situation.
Can I just point one thing out too? Like, I hadn't thought about this till we were having this conversation, but you joked about, what was the September date, Caroline?
September 7th.
Think about this. The team in the playoffs with the worst loss in all of college football this year is now one step closer to playing for a national championship. Like, to speak to how college football has changed, and maybe we need to change our tone as a general college football community around some things. Like, you could, if you wanted to make the resume argument, plenty of people were doing it. Well, Notre Dame didn't really play anybody, and they took the worst loss of the entire year. There were people trying to scream that. And now we see a Notre Dame team that just comes in and absolutely whoops butt, right? Like, for all the things that have been unclear in the college football playoff at times, and like, what do they need to get right? What do they need to get wrong? Like, the fact that they didn't let the worst loss of the entire season of any contender overwhelm what was obviously a very good football team, I think is sort of a testament to the process working. And it's also a testament to everybody, when we're watching next season, to be patient. If you take the worst loss of the entire season, it does not mean your season is lost anymore. Like, that's a far different way of looking at college football than we have in a long time.
Yeah, and the argument for a while when the 12-team playoff, when the playoff expanded to 12 teams, was that every game would become a little bit less meaningful, right? That's kind of what I said that when it expanded. I said, just because you got more of something doesn't mean it's more valuable now. But you think about Notre Dame's situation, it actually had the opposite effect. It made every game much more meaningful for Notre Dame, because after they lost to NIU, Fitz, you and I debated it a bunch. What would happen if Notre Dame lost again? Well, they had to win every game after that moment to make the playoff, and here they are as one of the top four teams in the country. So, I mean, guys, we have Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, and Notre Dame. The blood could not be any bluer. Oof. in the semifinals of the college football playoff. What an epic time.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. I don't know if I would have picked it. If you would have told me that those would have been the final four in August, I wouldn't have been surprised. So it's not like the 12-team playoff has, you know, caused so much commotion in the teams that we're going to see contending for a national championship. there would have been a lot of years in the four-team playoff where Notre Dame, with the, let's be honest, lighter strength of schedule that they had this past season and a loss as bad as they had to Northern Illinois, where they could have been left out. And the way that Notre Dame has been playing in this stretch, the way that they played against Georgia yesterday, I don't want to live in a world where this Notre Dame team gets left out of the playoff conversation and gets left out of the opportunity to win a national championship. That is what is so good about the expanded playoff.
Well, also, if it were a 14 playoff this year, Notre Dame and Ohio State wouldn't have made it. Arguably the two teams right now that like offensively, well, as a total team, nobody's playing better than Ohio State. And Notre Dame certainly is playing peacefully, right? Those two teams wouldn't have even been in the 14 playoffs. So it's already a win for college football.
Let me make one last comment on the Notre Dame and now future Penn State game, because I do think a big factor in this is the fact that, you know, this game got delayed because of the tragedy and you know, such a terrible situation. But I do think that it makes an impact on the next round of the college football playoff. And now with the Penn State Notre Dame game in the Orange Bowl in Miami, Penn State has an extra 2 days of rest in a huge game against the Notre Dame team that just played a physical game against Georgia. And I believe that is even more magnified when the margins between the two teams are so thin, like they are between Penn State and Notre Dame. I think the spread's like, what, 0.5 points right now between the two. It's going to be an extremely close game. Penn State got back from Arizona on long travel on Wednesday, which ends up being 48 hours before Notre Dame gets home. And then Notre Dame has a semifinal now on a short week. They get back Friday morning and have to turn around on a trip to Miami on Monday. Very, very little prep time for Notre Dame for one of their biggest games they're going to play against a really good Penn State team. Think about this. The GAs and analysts for Notre Dame were breaking down the Penn State film in the Sugar Bowl hotel before their game in the Sugar Bowl. So, like, that's the amount of prep that goes into this. And Notre Dame now has a short week, even shorter. And that's one of the reasons this game got played at 4 o'clock and not 7 o'clock on Thursday, because the coaches wanted to get home Thursday night. If you play at, like, 7, you don't travel until Friday morning. So they wanted to move that game up so they could get home and travel, sleep in their own bed, so they have time to prep then and have a practice day today. Like, Notre Dame is practicing today for Penn State after their game against Georgia. So I think the prep time there, Penn State gets a whole normal game week. Notre Dame certainly on a shorter schedule and coming off a really physical game.
And this game is Thursday. Like, this is the earlier of
Correct.
The two
exactly.
games.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, overall, it's even, you know, added insult to injury for Notre Dame. We talked about this yesterday, kind of when we were talking about the rest versus rust factor and how much of an advantage is this for Penn State. What about the Penn State perspective of Georgia and all of their GAs and, you know, all their scouts and everyone who's doing all the preparation in the Sugar Bowl? They prepared for Penn State because they knew who their opponent was. Penn State did not know who their opponent was. So, yes, advantage Penn State in terms of the rest factor, that they get two full more days than Notre Dame has to rest and recover. But what about the preparation factor?
Yeah, the way it would work for Penn State is they're probably splitting up over the last, 2 days? They probably split up their GAs and analysts and position coaches on offense and defense and had some of them work on Georgia, some of them work on Notre Dame. So that then once they know the result, they have a preliminary plan ready to go for the result. But, I mean, certainly makes it more difficult because you don't know who to game plan for. You don't want to present a game plan to your players or scouting report on two teams, right? That's just the coaches worried about two teams. But I do think that the rest factor is really, you know, at this point in the season, there's only so much game planning you can do. You're definitely going to put in some wrinkles. You're definitely going to put in some different things to stop, you know, for Notre Dame. It'll be, how do you stop the run? What do you do about the quarterback run game? All that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, your offense is your offense. There's not that much game planning that goes in. It's more like scouting report, you know, personnel driven than it really is scheme driven. But I think I'd take the extra day's rest over, you know, the extra days of maybe not having to worry about playing two teams.
And I think we need to remember that just because this game wasn't necessarily close in its final score doesn't mean it wasn't wildly physical at the line of scrimmage, right? Like, just those are some huge bodies that Notre Dame offense has been just pounded up against and vice versa. So I do think there is something to Adam's point to the rest. I mean, just because this game wasn't necessarily a nail biter all the way to the last possession doesn't mean that Notre Dame isn't feeling those collisions today.
No doubt.
All right, quick break here. Power Hour, Power House, and Power Outage on the other side. Okay, power hour, powerhouse. Say that five times fast. Fitz, who is your powerhouse today?
Notre Dame special teams. And I just feel like I've got too much love for special teams, love and hate right now for special teams, right? Like, what have we learned through the first this 1 year of the expanded college football playoff? Special teams are going to lose or win you every single game, it feels like. And that kickoff return, SportsCenter did a great job. Trevor Maddish, I'll give him a ton of credit this morning, did a great job of breaking down why it was a bust by Georgia and why Georgia didn't defend it properly. Fine. But you talk about these little special teams moments. We talked about the, you know, the punt that became a first down conversion out of all of this. It just speaks to the fact that this team was flying on all cylinders. That kickoff was a backbreaker. It felt like it set the whole tone. It took the air out of Georgia. So I just keep looking at special teams, particularly Brennerman, and say, man, like when the margins are as thin as they are between these teams that we're getting through at this point, making kicks and finding a way to get to flip field position is just, it's a bigger deal than ever.
Yeah, I think it's a good call by you. I'll go a step further. My powerhouse is Marcus Freeman. This guy is a star in college football and not nearly getting enough credit. If Notre Dame had not lost that fluke game to NIU, they're the story of the season, and it's not even close. They still should be, though. Everyone in the country has at least one fluke game. Now, Notre Dame's was worse than most, but the way they bounce back is one of the most impressive bounce backs I remember in college football as long as I've been following it. This Notre Dame team is dominant. They play with a chip on their shoulder. I love the swagger from Notre Dame, and it starts with the swagger from their head coach. Notre Dame is a hard, hard place to have your first head coaching job. One of the most difficult in the country, and it's been an unbelievable performance by Marcus Freeman since he got that job. I remember when he got that job and when the AD told the players in the weight room they were hiring Marcus Freeman after that long search process, and the players wanted Freeman because he was the DC, but the AD wanted to go make a splash hire, and they decided on Freeman. They told the players, and you saw the emotion the players had, and you saw how excited the players were in the locker room. Man, you can see how that team plays for their head coach now and why they were so excited. And this is a Notre Dame team that is battling for their head coach, and that's a special relationship in college football, and it's really, really tough to beat.
Yeah, Marcus Freeman is so likable. Like, I view Notre Dame, and I'm in a Notre Dame household currently, so I'm going to speak a little bit quietly. Notre Dame is an incredibly unlikable program. I think that Notre Dame fans probably hold themselves to a different standard. They feel that they hold themselves to a different standard than the rest of college football. But for so long, Notre Dame has just kind of been like the big, bad Notre Dame fighting Irish, and everybody was just kind of tired of all their bullcrap. Marcus Freeman has made Notre Dame likable. And I think that in
Which
and of
hard.
Itself
That's hard.
Yeah. is an incredible victory. And there were very fair critiques about Marcus Freeman after they lost to Northern Illinois, after they lost to Marshall last season of, look, it's one thing if you win the games you're not supposed to win, but you have to win the games that you're supposed to win. You can't be, you know, losing these games that you have no business losing, a la Northern Illinois. Those narratives start to change when you do something like what Notre Dame did yesterday. Georgia, in a former back-to-back national champions, they had the bye. They're one of the best teams in college football this year. And teams like Georgia and Alabama, SEC teams, have just kind of been hanging a gray cloud over this Notre Dame football program. And those SEC teams have held Notre Dame back from what they want to accomplish for so many years. So it just kind of feels like this proverbial monkey off of their back of, we took down the big bad SEC and now we're that much closer to winning a national championship. Now, they still have work to do. You still have to go out and beat Penn State. You still have to go out and win a national championship. But I think that what Marcus Freeman has done, I don't want to say turning this program around, because it's not like this program needed turning around. Notre Dame was in a very good position when Marcus Freeman took over, but it's continuing to stack those achievements and accomplishments that just kind of proves that we're in the place where we want to be in, Fitz.
Yeah, no, it's a great call by Marcus Freeman. Also, when you're that dashingly good looking, everybody wants to root for you. I was just going to say
he's so freaking good looking too.
He's dreamy.
We're burying the lead here. Like, yeah. he walks in the room and like everybody's like, man, that's not fair. You're not allowed to be that talented, that good looking, and the head coach at Notre Dame. I don't know. Like, it's just some guys win the life lottery.
In that same breath, though, I'll say power outage. And since I'm the resident LSU fan on the podcast, I'm allowed to say this. Nobody else is. Power outage, Brian Kelly. Because Brian Kelly left Notre Dame because he said winning a national championship at LSU was easier. Now, fast forward to now, Marcus Freeman has his team in the college football playoff semifinal. Again, he hasn't won a national championship yet, so I'm not going to jump to conclusions here. But he has his team now in the third round of the college football playoff, and Brian Kelly has yet to sniff a college football playoff. And now that we're in a 12-team college football world, the path for Notre Dame feels a little bit easier than it does for LSU, who has to get through Ole Miss and Texas A&M and Alabama and the gauntlet of an SEC schedule every single year. And that's not to say that Brian Kelly hasn't had some success at LSU. He got LSU to the SEC championship game in year one. He had Jaden Daniels winning a Heisman Trophy in year two. And now he's been, you know, faced with replacing the future offensive rookie of the year in Jaden Daniels and two of the best wide receivers in college football last year. So it's not like he's done nothing. But Marcus Freeman has his team exactly where they want to be. And now LSU fans are kind of sitting around and thinking, well, when is that going to be us? When are we going to be in the college football playoff? Because once the field expanded, we knew that fans' patience was going to go down and down and down. So power outage to Brian Kelly for saying it was a lot easier to win a national championship at LSU.
Doesn't that also lead to some power outage? I mean, there's a couple power outage nominees here. I think you could go to the people that scream Notre Dame needs to join a conference because it feels like it's working out pretty well for them the way they got it going. Yeah. And also, you could go power outage to the SEC as a whole, which needed a weird win for Texas to get into this thing. We almost had the first Final Four. But I'll go different power outage on this one. Still big picture. My power outage is to first-round buys. Every single team with the first-round buy started slow. We wondered going into this game against Georgia, like, what would it look like? And look, I think part of that is the defensive matchup we had in this. But realistically, if we go to every single team that had a month off, and Adam mentioned this yesterday's show, and I was looking at it last night for Georgia, and I'm thinking, man, are they going to have to reach the point where if you're a top four team, you get to pick? Like, I don't know, because it's just wild to watch four teams with the month off all sort of have to battle their way through the first quarter. Power outage to first round buys being what we thought they were going to be. We thought it was going to be such an advantage that teams were going to want to take it away, and instead it looks like such a disadvantage that they're going to be like, let's expand the playoffs so nobody has to wait for a month to play football.
And even with all that being said, if I was a head football coach and I was faced with the decision of you have to play a game in the first round of the playoffs or you get to sit at home in the first round of the playoffs, I would take sit at home 7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah. Sure.
But it is a fair point. Is it a factor of Arizona State and Boise State, two teams that were outmatched in the second round of the playoffs, happened to have a first round bye? Or is it rust versus rest? I think there's a fair argument to be made for both, Adam.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's the combination of teams had first-round buys that shouldn't have first-round buys. And on top of that, some of those teams had to wait a month to play football. And that's tough to overcome. I'll give you my power outage. I'm going to play off of Fitz's Notre Dame special teams. That's, you know, power outage is Georgia special teams, lost in the game. The weakness in this game and the significant factor in what actually happened. When there's not much offense, you can't have special teams mistakes. And giving up the 98-yard touchdown return immediately put them in that deep hole, 17-point swing, really inexcusable in a game like this, in a game of this magnitude. And then you think about some of the punt situations. They failed to flip the field a couple times, some mistakes penalty-wise. So I think Georgia special teams taking a serious look in the mirror right now, and I think Kirby Smart's got to make some tough decisions.
After these last few games with, you know, a couple Texas missed field goals, some Boise State missed field goals, the second half kickoff touchdown down return for Notre Dame, the old adage is defense wins championships. Screw that. Special teams wins championships. That's been the story of these playoffs
McAfee.
So far.
McAfee will second that all day long. Let's go.
Yeah, punters around the world are like, hell yeah, they do. Hell yeah, special teams wins championships.
Kickers are people too.
Kickers are people too, and Parker Jones is a person too, okay? So everyone be nice to Parker
Jones. We all know
that
now. I mean, my God.
I fear his address is going to get leaked on Twitter at some point over the next coming days. So everyone be nice to Parker Jones. He didn't mean it. He did not mean it. All right, that's going to do it for us today. He's Adam Brenneman. You can find him on Twitter at AdamBrenneman81. You can find him at Jason Fitz, and you can find me at CarolineFenton1. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. So give it a like, give it a subscribe, give it a review, give it a comment. Tell your friends, tell the people you hate, tell Parker Jones, tell Marcus Freeman, because we're a huge fan of him here on the podcast for many different reasons. We'll be back on Tuesday with a full preview of all of the semifinal matchups, our initial thoughts, and our official predictions. We're out.